Welcome. You are listening to Park Avenue Podcasts, and this is Rabbi Elliot Cosgrove. While it's always better to hear it live, this is a place to be to catch the music, sermons, and select programs of Park Avenue Synagogue. If you like what you are hearing or want to learn more about the community, please check out our website at www.pasyn.org. Enjoy our latest installment.
By Jews talking about racism. Okay, let's get going.
Hi, welcome to the Park Avenue Synagogue Parsha podcast. I'm Rabbi Ethan Witkowski, and today we are joined by Park Avenue's rabbinic intern, Victoria Bideau. Vicky, it's nice to have you with us.
Hi, Rabbi Witkowski. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be part of the podcast.
Vicky, so do you want to just tell a little, how long have you been at Park Avenue Synagogue? Where do you go to school?
Yes, happy to. So I'm a full-time student at the Jewish Theological Seminary. I'm about to enter into my last year and last and final year at JTS. And I've been at Park Avenue for almost a year. July will be my 1 year anniversary. And I'm hoping to spend, I will be spending another year serving the Park Avenue Synagogue community until I'm done with my studies.
So today we're going to talk about Parshat Naso, and I'm interested in this Parsha because it contains one of the more disturbing rituals in the Torah. And as we look at parts of the Torah that seem to reflect values which we might find abhorrent to our modern audience, and Vicky, I'm going to ask you to explain the Sota ritual, this thing that a jealous husband takes his wife to the priests and what happens. And we're going to explain it in a second. But one of the reasons why I'm interested in this is because I've been thinking a lot this week, as Vicky, I know you have, we've talked about it, what we do when we see things in our world which we find abhorrent or seem to reflect abhorrent values, and the questions and conversations about race that are being had, which need to be had in our country, reflect really deep-seated problems and hurts. I'm hoping we might be able to draw some parallels to this. And before we do, with all respect, two white Jews are going to talk about this ritual which is negatively affecting women, and we're going to, I hope, link it to what's happening in the country. And hopefully by looking at this ritual together, we can see if our tradition has any wisdom that we can bring to the world around us. Vicky, do you mind explaining to us what the Sota ritual is?
Yes, absolutely. So I just wanted to very quickly reflect on something that you said, that I think that the Torah, one of the beauties of the Torah is that as hard as it is, it actually reflects the entirety of the experience of being human. And so it includes the hard things and painful things. It has a lot of characters who are flawed. And as you mentioned, a lot of rituals, which definitely I personally and many other people as well in our contemporary society find difficult and even appalling. And it also has beautiful parts, right? And so our job is kind of to balance out and to work with both of those. So the Sota ritual, to answer your question, is an ordeal. It's actually the only real ordeal in the Torah. It's very unusual. And it is about a woman who's suspected of adultery by her husband. And when her husband has a fit of jealousy come over him, he has the right to take his wife to the temple, to the priest. And then this ordeal, the priest basically makes the woman go through an ordeal. And then the ordeal is the following. They bare her head, which we know is actually considered to be a very humiliating act in the ancient Near Eastern context.
What do you mean bare her head? They shave it?
No, they take, so in the ancient Near East, women's hair were covered, and they would take off whatever she was covering her hair with, and they would dishevel her hair. They would kind of make her hair, you know, go all over. And in fact, the rabbis even say that they would bare parts of her body. She not only, you know, emotionally and spiritually, but she even literally was quite naked in front of these men. That in itself, of course, is very humiliating. But then she's made to drink these bitter waters, which the Torah describes how the priest makes the waters, and she drinks it. And the belief is that if she indeed commit adultery, then this sota water would disfigure her body. The Torah doesn't actually say what that means. Some commentators say that she would actually die. Other commentators believe that she would miscarry. But the understanding is that she would be physically harmed. And if she was not an adulteress, right? So if she was innocent, then she would come out physically unharmed. However, and this I think is a really important part, is that there are no consequences for the husband, right? So the husband can take the wife at any moment that he has this fit of jealousy, whatever that means. Whenever he decides that he feels jealous, he can make her wife go through this very humiliating process. And there are no consequences for that for him. There are only consequences for her. And even if she is innocent, she's still humiliated. So she still goes through this very difficult process. I don't even have to read this with a feminist lens, although I do, because it's hard for me not to. But even the pshat, even the simple meaning of the text is just, it's very unfair. It's very unegalitarian. It is really not portraying the type of marriage that I think that so many of us in the Jewish world is trying to uphold, values of dignity and equality and love. And the humiliation of woman, and really the emphasis on her value being her sexuality to her husband, is very disturbing. So I was wondering, Rabbi Witkowski, now that we've gone through kind of in detail what exactly sota is about, I was wondering that you, as a rabbi who, you know, give sermons and teach parsha classes, like when you come across Parshat Naso and you remember, oh, this is the parsha with the sota ritual, what do you do with it? How do you proceed? Do you ignore it? Do you talk about it? Do you analyze it? What do you do?
Well, you know, the rabbinic answer is yes.
Right.
We do any of those things. I mean, well, I'm going to prepare you right now, Vicky, that I'm going to say, what do you do when you come up with this? But I'll talk for a second so you can think of your answer, because I think you laid it out. I think we have, by my count, maybe three ways of reading these texts or what to do with. So one, I think you said, ignore it. And that's an option. You could even, by the way, go so far as to say, I'm going to delete it from the Torah. Mm-hmm. You could say it's, and the rabbis in the Mishnah and the Talmud run through a whole list of passages that they say should not be read out loud in the public reading of the Torah, or should be read but not translated in the English or something. And this is not one of them, but the rabbis acknowledge that there might be times where we say, for the good of the community, we're just going to cut this out. You could do that. I'm not sure I like that answer. It feels a little bit dishonest, because it is, and it feels a little bit like something that I can do because I am from the privileged class here of male rabbis, and I can ignore it, and it doesn't affect me in the same way that it might affect a reader of the Torah of a different gender. But that's an option. Another option is, and I think we hear this all the time, is we can contextualize. You can sort of say, oh, okay, it sounds bad, but maybe for its day, it wasn't as bad as it was. And we can't expect the Torah to, you know, from whatever century it's from, be as woke as we want it to be in 2020. And so Professor Judith Hauptman has this idea when she talks about reading the rabbis and saying, you can't hold them accountable for our ethics and morality today, but you can look and see how they were compared to the ethics and morality of the time period around them.
Right, their peers.
Rabbi Dr. Hauptman shows that the Torah and the rabbis tend to be a step towards egalitarianism from the people around them. And so this ritual, while terrible, is better than death, which is what the other cultures in the ancient Near East prescribed for a man who suspected his wife of adultery.
Correct.
So you could say, well, look, they didn't get it right, but at least they were trying. I'm not sure if that's so satisfying to me either. Vicky, would love to hear what you think about that particular way of reading it.
Yeah, I think that contextualizing is important if you want to understand the text. but it's not useful if you're trying to derive meaning from it for your contemporary life and world, because it's helpful. Like, it's good for me to know that, you know, maybe the Torah actually was trying to protect a woman who otherwise would have just been, you know, beaten to death by her husband when she came home, which might have been the case in other cultures. By the Torah saying that, no, you actually have to bring her to the priest, the Torah saying we're taking the power out of the husband's hands and we're giving it to the priests, who, you know, maybe are better at determining, bringing justice, even if it's through this very unusual ritual, which, by the way, might be just a joke. It might be fake, according to the Torah itself. We don't actually know what the effect of this was. I mean, it's magic. We don't even know if the Torah itself believes in magic. Right. So
you could almost imagine, the husband brings the wife to the temple, and the priests read this whole thing of all the terrible stuff they're going to do to her, to the husband, and then they bring her inside, and they're like, you know, have some coffee, sit for a little bit.
Exactly. Like, yeah, the priests are protecting the woman. Right. So we don't actually know. I think what Rabbi Dr. Hauptmann says is very important, and we always have to understand the history. But then again, how does that help me today, right? Like, what does that say to me in 2020 about being a female reader of this text, and somebody who wants to read this text as not just a text that happened to be, you know, written at a certain time in a certain place, but as a text that is sacred and that actually has something to say about how I should be living my life today. So when it comes to that, I want something more than contextualizing. What can we do?
Very interesting. And I'm going to note that I just interrupted you to make your point in a conversation about gender roles. And I really liked your answer, so we're not going to go back and edit it, but I apologize publicly. So I agree with you. And I think that the third option, which I like, is you leave it in, you read it, and I think you're supposed to feel bad about it. And you're supposed to channel those feelings into positive action today. Yeah. I think the reason, you know, every year when we read Sota, I cringe. I feel really uncomfortable. And it reminds me that I need to be a part of an egalitarian Judaism that is doing right by women, I hope, and not just religiously, but societally. I need to be part of the solution, not the problem. And I wouldn't get that reminder if we cut it out or if I tried to explain it away. I think that keeping those yucky feelings can be good. It can help push us to action. And that's sort of the three. So there's the cutting it out of the tradition. There's the contextualizing sort of the badness away. And then there's sort of sitting in the badness for a little bit and hoping that will fuel us to move forward. I think that's the one that I would like.
Yeah. And I think that, right, in order to do that, you can't, if you contextualize too much, it's actually easy to say, oh, this is a problem of the past. But by reading it with contemporary lens and trying to figure out and to doing this third method that you're talking about, this channeling for betterment or for, you know, evolving and development and reflection in our own lives, it means, okay, I'm, you know, I personally might not be taking my wife to the priest and making her drink bitter waters, but what is it that I'm doing in my life that might not exactly be perfect? And this, by the way, happens in all areas. It's not only about gender. It happens in all areas of our lives, that the Torah, I hope, is trying to push us to strive to be better, to aspire to do more.
I hope so too. It also goes to your point earlier of meaning versus sort of academic study.
Yeah.
That this gets you to meaning, I think, in a way that others don't. So Vicky, let me ask you. So what do you do with a text like this, and or how do you read it? How do you make meaning out of it?
I really appreciated what you said about not ignoring texts that are difficult. And that's also my kind of go-to, is that I want to be able to have everything as part of the canon and struggle and grapple with texts. And that's what the rabbis do. And so that's also what I do. I think that is actually the kind of like the Jewish response to the hard texts and the hard things. And for me, every single time I try and understand the Torah, I need to be able a little bit to read it through the eyes of the male perspective, because I can't always, I can't always sit down and just be angry at whatever I'm reading, whether that's Gemara or, you know, the commentators or Torah or even just history. So I often try and actually understand it, which is a little bit of the contextualizing method, trying to understand it through the perspective of the Bible. And then as an interpreter, when I try and actually interpret the text, then I can use my own experience and perspective as a woman to try and make a meaning out of it. And I also just want to say that I deeply believe in talking about these texts, but also as a pedagogue, I really believe in teaching these texts. And that is exactly what the rabbis did. I think it's actually kind of striking that there are many things in the Torah that are not discussed by the rabbis. And Sota is not one of them. Sota has its own tractate of Mishnah. It has its own tractate of Talmud. And the rabbis go in depth into trying to figure out what's going on here, even though they clearly feel uncomfortable with it. They feel uncomfortable to a certain degree with the misogyny. And I think to a very large degree, they feel uncomfortable with the magic. The rabbis don't really like magic. And so they really try and make the Sota ordeal into a kind of like a court case, which is normally what would happen to any kind of crime, like any kind of suspected crime, you would take the person to court. And so that's what the rabbis actually do. The way they interpret a fit of jealousy, which sounds like, you know, something coming out of passion from the, and really subjective from the man, the way they interpret that is that the man, the husband, has to warn the wife before she goes and secludes herself with another man. It's so different than what the simple meaning of the text is. And you have to have witnesses for the seclusion. So the woman has to be witnessed being secluded by two people, has to witness her secluding herself with another man. You need witnesses for the husband warning her not to seclude herself, right? So there's all these hoops and loops and hoops that the rabbis are building in order to make sure that basically the ordeal never happens. And so that, I think, for me, teaches me a lot about what it looks like to take your own values and confront the fact that they don't actually match the values of the Torah.
It's also, what's so cool about that is, and it's the same thing the rabbis do for capital punishment. It's the rabbis using their tools to get mm-hmm. where they want to go. And right, and what the rabbis can do is interpret the Torah and make rules out of it. And so if they don't like something, they're going to interpret it to basically legislate it out of existence, which is such a cool way, I think, of working within the system they've created to still make sure it reflects their values.
Yeah.
So let's bring it to, I think, something that will make the two of us pretty uncomfortable, which we now know we're supposed to be uncomfortable. I have no grand theories of race in this country and what to say about it, but I do feel very, very sad and uncomfortable and guilty when I see and think about how people of color are treated. And I wonder if we can apply anything that we have sort of talked about, how we read an ancient text that makes us feel this uncomfortable, to how we witness a modern text, a modern history, a modern fact that makes us feel uncomfortable and awful.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's really important. And if the Torah truly is the sacred text that is water and fire and the tree of life, right? We have all these metaphors from the rabbis that's really supposed to be life-giving, then it has to say something about what we are going through today. And if we're going to keep it relevant, if it is relevant for the 21st century, then it has to say something even about a protest movement going on in the United States that is really trying to fight systematic racism in America. Not something that I think the rabbis ever really considered. And I also just want to really emphasize what you said, is that I feel really uncomfortable talking about this as a white woman, partially because I myself feel guilty, right? Like I myself feel that I have in many ways, if not even intentionally, but definitely unintentionally, being part of this system, have contributed to people being marginalized. In a way, we're actually like the men of the Torah, right? Reading the Torah with male perspective means recognizing that you have privilege, and that privilege puts you in a position to cause harm to others, right? In the case of the Sota, the women, and in the case of United States, 21st century America, it means the way that we as benefiters of white privilege have caused systems of oppression for people of color and especially African Americans. So that recognition is I think essential. The other thing I want to say is this grappling piece, right? That in many ways, my initial instincts when I come across these very difficult texts, whether that's the text of the Torah or, like you said, the text of what is happening today, I want to run away. I'm like, get me out of here. Get me to a safe, beautiful, comfortable, pleasant place where everything is Gan Eden. Everything is, you know, the Garden of Eden, and people love each other and things are great. But that's not our work, right? Like, that's not what the Torah tells us to do. It's not what the rabbis tell us to do. And the fact that the rabbis do engage with some of the hardest texts and, you know, write a whole tractate on it means that we too need to grapple with this. I need to talk about it and turn it and really dive deep.
Vicky, you said it absolutely beautifully. I think that the need to grapple with it is that third option that I started, right? That to say we're gonna pretend like it's not there is wrong and is something that only we can do because we happen to be white. And to contextualize it, oh well, it's better than it used to be.
Yeah.
might be interesting to an academic, but is not a way that we are gonna make meaning or connection today. And so I think it is sort of, we need to feel a little guilty, and what we do with those feelings is what's going to be important. But specifically what you said too about grappling with it and engaging with it. And I will say that, and I know that you're a part of this with us, that it's something Park Avenue Synagogue is going to spend some time talking about in the days and weeks ahead, where everyone should look for some emails coming from us about some conversations that are happening, some conversations we're going to start within our community, without our community, and things we're going to be a part of. So hopefully we can sit in these uncomfortable feelings together for a little bit, and hopefully we can do a little bit to help move things forward too.
Yeah. And as, you know, the rabbis in the Talmud say that learning Torah is important, or it's the most important, because it brings you to action. And so I really hope that that's going to be the case of learning the Torah of what is happening right now, is that it's going to move us to not only to think and to grapple and to discuss, but also to action.
Victoria, it has been an absolute pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much for being with us today. I look forward to having you on many times in the year to come. So thank you so much for being here. And to everyone, thank you for tuning in. Please do look for some emails coming from the synagogue for all of our online learning and services, but specifically for some of the conversations that we hope to start on this issue and on other important issues of our day. Shabbat shalom, everyone.
Shabbat shalom.
Thank you for listening to Park Avenue Podcasts, a place to be to catch the music, sermons, and select programs of Park Avenue Synagogue. If you like what you are hearing or want to learn more about the community, please check out our website at www.pasyn.org. See you in shul.
Hallelujah. 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 Hallelujah.